Darren wants me to release apologies because a couple of days ago he got informed of a school appointment which clashed with its meeting. And remember talking about time differences, it's in the middle of the day where he is. And we all know that family comes before party. So he asked me to just stand in for him. Don't know why, but he decided. Many will be disappointed that he's not been able to do this because, rightly so, I'm disappointed as well because Darren has an almost cyclopedic knowledge of football, whereas I've got a very superficial understanding of the game. So I'll start about Qatar. Qatar was a very controversial choice for the World Cup this year. Sport has always been used as a PR. You've got the Grand Prix, tennis, and lately you've had the debate on golf going to Saudi Arabia, which was an issue. It's called sports washing, a form of whitewashing or greenwashing if you're an ecologist. Qatar is one of the biggest. It's the home of one of the biggest TV sports cable channels, rivaling Sky Sports. It seems that Qatar is trying to buy national prestige. It's also an expression of its independence, since recently it's been locked in a diplomatic and political rivalry with Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. And they see this as giving it some identity as an independent nation. Ever since Qatar was chosen to be the host of the 2022 World Cup, it's been the centre of well-founded allegations that it was got awarded it because of FIFA corruption and bribery. The cost of the World Cup to Qatar is approximately 220 billion dollars, but that includes seven new football stadiums, a new metro system, a new airport, plenty of new roads, and about 100 new hotels for the fans. Apart from the promotion of nationalism and its international prestige, the World Cup is also a showcase for corporate branding and advertising. About 1.5 million fans are expected to turn up, and there'll be hundreds of millions around the world watching on TV. Qatar is perhaps the most liberal of the Gulf states. It's the home of Al Jazeera, broadcasting from the capital, Doha. Just as an example, we'll digress a little bit. I once was in a bar and got talking to Al Qatar airline crew. There were about half a dozen of them, and each one was from a different country. One of the only Qatar person there was one of the women. I assumed that she was cabin crew, but it turned out that she was a woman's pilot. She was the pilot. So she went on to explain that women in Qatar have been granted more freedoms and more opportunities. And it gave me a lesson in stereotyping that just because of that she may have looked like a cabin crew, she was actually the pilot. So I got slapped down for my stereotyping. Qatar operates the Kafala migrant work system. Basically, that's importing workers from abroad. There is four times as many foreign workers in Qatar, as the Qataris, 400,000 Qatar citizens, but 2 million migrant workers. And the migrants aren't just construction and service workers. For this World Cup, Qatar has rented from Pakistan 4,500 troops for security, and they went to Turkey and rented 3,000 Turkish paramilitary riot police, plus this, the whole lot of assorted private security personnel from all over the world. So they go out and buy what they want, basically. After criticism of the kafala working conditions and the work contracts of the migrants, there's been a series of window dressing reforms, but it's been superficial change, long hours. Bad working conditions. Have been still operating. It's estimated that there's been 7,000 deaths during the build up to the World Cup with construction workers, and there's tens of thousands of injuries. Actual accurate figures are difficult to come by. FIFA and Qatar claim there's only been three deaths directly related to the stadium building. But there's been a whole lot of infrastructure being built, and a lot of the deaths are actually from diseases and illnesses contracted by the conditions. There's been rules brought in to restrict working during the day, but they're always being broken. So people are dying from heat stress and high temperatures. Each death or injury gets no health and safety investigation. A fake death certificate is written. The body is shoved into a coffin and it's shipped home to where he comes from. There's a lot of hypocrisy being expressed about this World Cup. There's many civil liberty issues. For human rights, Qatar is very low down in liberties. But what's taking most of the attention is Qatar's discrimination and persecution of homosexuals. These are against all the principles of every sporting association, but they're being flouted by Qatar. The official British government advice for gays going to the World Cup is get back into the closet. Don't tell anybody, don't show anybody, don't display any gay tendencies or feelings. And you get people like David Beckham, Gary Neville, and many other footballers who are making loads of money from becoming pundits for the media in Qatar. David Beckham is reported to be getting 150 millions from the Qatar government for being its goodwill ambassador. And he's part of the whitewashing, the sports washing. Some countries are making token gestures. USA will have gay rainbow on their training shirts, but it'll only be the training shirts, not their actual playing gear. Denmark try to have their training strips with the slogan "Human Rights for All," but FIFA banned them. So they've gone and designed a black strip that they will wear for some of the games, that they're calling it the colour of sadness. What will be interest for some people is that Iran is in this World Cup, and it is curious whether the Iran players, the Iranian players, will express opposition to the crackdown by the Iran regime. Because this is what's taking place in the domestic games in Iran. Players who score goals aren't celebrating like they should. They're making gestures of solidarity with the protesters. And it'll be interesting to see if they do this in the World Cup. Experience from previous World Cups in Brazil and South Africa is that the super-duper new stadiums that get built end up becoming white elephants after the World Cup's finished. Because there's basically no local team that can provide fans to fool them. So basically, the cost of the maintenance is too high, and they eventually fall into disrepair and simply aren't used. But in this case, Qatar Stadium, some of them have been modified so that they can be actually dismantled. One of the stadiums is built using containers, shipping containers, and they'll be dismantling it and perhaps moving it to someplace else. But always sport is declared neutral by many people, but this cannot be exempt from politics. Sport cannot be exempt, and football can't be exempt. Some people here might remember the photo that circulated that shows the England team during the 1930s in an international game against Germany. The whole English team lined up, giving the Nazi Sieg Heil salute. In 1970, the pretext for a war between Honduras and El Salvador was the World Cup. But there's also what's called Scotland's Game of Shame. No, it's not getting beat by England or failing to beat Faroe Islands, but a 1973 game Scotland played against Chile. USSR had been expelled from the Argentinian World Cup for refusing to play Chile because of the overthrow of Allende in the coup. But Scotland agreed a match against Chile, not even a necessary game, but a warm-up game to prepare for Argentina. USSR had sacrificed a place in the World Cup because the stadium had been used as a detention camp where people were tortured and killed. For Scotland, there was nothing at stake by not playing the game. It was a practice match, a glorified kick around. But Scotland's SFA at the time were deluded with grand ideas that they might even win the World Cup, so nothing was going to interfere. So they actually refused to meet the Chilean political refugees, much less listen to what their pleas for the game to be cancelled. The Scotland's professional footballers were polled, and only a few opposed the game. Disgracefully, all the rest of the Scottish players were in favour of going ahead with the game, believing a new lick of paint on the stadium would hide its bloodstains. Victor Chara, Chile's equivalent of Bob Dylan, was one of those detained at the stadium, and he was recognised. He was brought out to the centre of the field. The soldier said, "So you are Victor Chara, let us hear you play a tune now," and then proceeded to smash his hands with rifle butts. He was later to be executed. He was one amongst many who suffered in the stadium that Scotland had agreed to play in. A Scottish folk singer wrote a song, "Blood on the Grass." It really should be the song that Tartan Army sings instead of Flower of Scotland, as it's a reminder of the shame that football brought to Scotland. I've concentrated on a bit on international football, but at club level, there is also full of politics. Many Eastern European sides have a fan base that are as racist and neo-fascist, but there are also examples of left-wing supporters. St. Pauli of Hamburg, and then there's Celtic Green Brigade support for the Palestinians that they've showed by flying the Palestinian flag in solidarity. But there's also Beitar Jerusalem. It's a Zionist club in Israel, and it resembles Glasgow Rangers' anti-Catholic bigotry. But in their case, it's obviously anti-Muslim. Its fans burnt down the club's admin offices when it signed a couple of Muslim players. Rivalries between clubs have often had roots in political differences. Real Madrid was seen as the club of Franco, while Barcelona reflected the Catalonian nationalists. Lazio supporters in Italy identifies with Mussolini's fascism. But football authorities don't like political messages, well, at least some of them. They may have logos blazoned across their chest advertising alcohol and gambling, which is permitted. But when Robbie Fowler of Liverpool dared in 1997 to reveal a T-shirt supporting the striking Dockers, he was fined by UEFA. This talk has been mostly about the World Cup. But much of it is applies to other international sporting occasions. Each 4 years, Olympic Games is much the same story. Countries using it as a platform for their nationalism. Not spent much time spent talking about the commercialization, the sponsorship, the buying and selling of players, which will take place after the tournament. I hope the discussion picks up on some of these points. But basically, that's my introduction, my talk over. So it's over to you now for your contributions.